Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. This is Catherine Creston with Beyond Words Live. This show is designed to be a platform for survivors to tell their story in their own words. Without further ado, let's see who our guest is today.
Today, we have Laramie, and she comes to share a lot of her story involving activism and what she is involved with today and what her hopes and plans are for the future. Laramie, let me bring her online right now. How are
Hello,
you this
Catherine.
Morning?
I'm doing Hello. Great. Thank you so much for having me.
You are so very welcome. I think probably the best place to start is what inspired you to become more involved with things? What was the catalyst that kind of inspired you in that process?
I think I knew from a very early age that I wanted to help people. Mm-hmm. That was important to me. That was a value that was instilled to me by my mother. And so I think, you know, as a young person, as a teenager and in college, I always knew that I wanted to help, but I was trying to figure out the way to affect the most positive change. And so that is something that I have still been trying to figure out, you know, for the last 20 years. But I knew that there were several issues that were very important to me, including ending violence against women and spreading awareness about violence against women. And so I think that that is something that I've really channeled my energy and my passion and my efforts into, whether that was through my academic studies or whether that was through my like volunteering and activism or through my career choices over the years.
Mm-hmm. And when you were in college, what did you study? Was it related to activism in any way? Or?
Well, yes and no. So I got my undergraduate and my graduate degree in anthropology. And so some people say, well, anthropology, well, what do you do with that? But anthropology gives you it gives you a glimpse into the human condition from a cultural perspective, but also from like a biological and evolutionary perspective. So while I was taking, you know, biological anthropology classes and cultural anthropology classes, I was also taking a lot of women and gender studies classes and looking at culture and looking at race and class and violence against women, you know, from a historical perspective.
Mm.
And so that was one way of getting like the theory and the science behind the things that I had observed, you know, in my own life. And something that's a little bit different, in some of the research and some of the work that I did, I looked at non-human primates. I looked at studies of monkeys and apes in their different cultures, in their and how they dealt with violence against females. And basically, you know, a lot of what it boiled down to, whether you're talking about non-human primates or you're talking about human primates, you know, women today in modern societies, is that what it comes down to is that women who have a strong support network, whether that is through a macaque society living in a matriline group with all the mothers and the daughters and the sisters and the aunts staying in the same group their whole life,
mm-hmm.
and really building those bonds, or if you're talking about human women that have strong social bonds either through friendships or through coworkers or through family, women who have a strong support network are less vulnerable to male violence. And if there is a time where they do experience that violence, they're more likely to be able to get out. And that is, you know, something that I've seen over and over again from, you know, when I started volunteering at a domestic violence shelter in Lubbock, Texas, you know, when I was 19 years old, all the way to the current work, you know, that I do today.
My goodness. So when you started working at a shelter, did that inspire you to do what you're doing today, or
I would say something else?
Yeah.
Well, it was something that I knew that I wanted to do. And at the same time, I grew up seeing domestic violence and seeing all the complexities of it, as far as in a woman that may feel stuck because of finances or because of the abusive partner, you know, exerting all of their control over them, you know, financially, emotionally, physically, you know, threatening to take the children away. All of the classic telltale signs of a domestic violence relationship, you know, I saw that from the time I was a young child, and I knew I didn't want my life to be that way. And I knew that I wanted to help other people the same way that I had tried to help, you know, the people, you know, in my family. And so I started volunteering when I was in college. And, you know, this was the same time I was, you know, starting to take the gender studies classes and getting involved in feminist groups on campus. And so I knew it was something that I wanted to do, and it was something that would always be important to me. And, you know, I knew that I needed to learn the skills. I had the passion, and I felt like I had the insight, but, you know, I also needed to know the theory. I needed to know the science, and I needed to know, you know, how to be an advocate and have healthy boundaries with people while you're doing this kind of work that, you know, very personally affects you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think a lot of survivors or people that have been exposed to that environment probably make some of the best advocates, but if they're not prepared to deal with the vicarious trauma aspects, you know, of it,
definitely,
then it can be challenging.
And self-care is very important at the top of the list, as well as, you know, setting healthy boundaries, figuring out what you do have control over and what you don't have control over, and working within the system. And so that's something that, you know, I've kind of gone back and forth with over the years, being an activist, working to change the system, and being an advocate, working within the system and within the framework that is provided to you, either through the organization that you're working with, or our legal system, our judicial system. And so that's something that I think will always be important to me. And I kind of go back and forth on which ways that, like I said, I can affect the most change. And so, you know, going back to that time of being young and in college and, you know, working at a domestic violence shelter, you know, I also was exposed to kind of the activist side, even though I was in a very conservative political climate in Lubbock, Texas. And that was through these feminist organizations. And that's what first brought me to the Vagina Monologues. And that was way back in 2002.
Wow.
And so the Vagina Monologues in 2002 in Lubbock, Texas was not a large production. It wasn't something that we were even allowed to promote on campus. And it was something that I didn't even, you know what I was getting into. I just know that there was an opportunity to be on stage and share women's stories. But I didn't know what we were going to. We didn't have rehearsals. I don't even think I had read over the script or the pieces that I was given until we were, you know, there. And it was in a small room in the University Center, and there were maybe 50 people in the audience. And then I shared these stories that Eve Ensler, the author, had captured, these different women's stories about violence and sex and hope and love and sexuality and the whole gamut. And so I've been very involved in the V-Day movement to end violence against women and girls, and involved with the Vagina Monologues ever since then. And
so you've seen a lot of change.
I've seen a lot of change, and I've also decided to change the environment that I was in. So, you
right.
know, I've lived in other cities and, you know, went to graduate school and I traveled and I'm in Austin, where is a great place for change.
Right.
It's a great place for change. It's a great place for activism. And there's still all of these core problems of
mm-hmm.
Violence and racism and sexism and blatant homophobia and problems in the justice system, even though we are in this great progressive mecca. Those things still exist here.
Yeah. I think, you know, anywhere you go is not a perfect environment. There's always
of
going
course.
To be room for change and molding, if you will, to a better environment. And it's one step at a time type thing, too, because we don't know exactly what that's going to look like. We just know where we want to head.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. And, you know, in Austin, you know, being the live music capital of the world, being a mecca,
mm-hmm.
you know, at least in the South and in Texas, you know, for the arts and for
mm-hmm.
The university and for all the tech industries, it's also sometimes, I think people kind of feel like it's a little bubble, you know, because we have more, I guess, freedoms in some way,
mm-hmm.
and we also feel like we have more protections, but
mm-hmm.
at the same time, that also allows people to be a little bit naive to, you know, to the issues that are still there and still in our city, even though it
yeah.
is a great city, you know, especially, like I said, with violence, with racism, with homophobia,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all still there.
It is. It is.
But,
I feel like it's changing a little bit for the better. It's
yeah,
just not
yeah.
fast enough. You know, we'd like to see it go night to day, you know.
Yeah,
quickly,
and that's
but.
Why, you know, we continue our efforts. We, you know, continue to have
mm-hmm.
courageous conversations with people about the things that are uncomfortable sometimes to talk about. Whether that's with our coworkers and our colleagues or with our friends and our family, or if it's trying to have them with elected officials, you know, whether they hear you or
mm-hmm.
not. And so that is, you know, one way in which, you know, I've continued down the activist path is continuing working with the Vagina Monologues. I've
mm-hmm.
acted and produced several productions here in Austin and in conjunction with the Vagina Monologues and V-Day, there is what is now an annual event called 1 Billion Rising. And
yeah.
that is something that Eve Ensler, the author of the Vagina Monologues and the founder of V-Day, has encouraged literally 1 billion people around the world to stand up
mm-hmm.
against violence, against gender-based violence. And so this year, for 1 Billion Rising, and every year it's on V-Day, which is February 14th. It's on Valentine's Day, and they say that V stands for victory, for vagina, for Valentine, and an end to violence. And so this year will be our third year to participate in 1 Billion Rising. And they encourage people all around the world that on February
mm-hmm.
14th to start a rally, to do a protest, to do a community gathering that's encouraging people, encouraging survivors to share their stories, encouraging people to heal through music and art and through dance. And the first year that 1 Billion Rising took place was, I guess, 2 years ago, and we had a great showing at the Texas Capitol, and we had speakers from the anti-violence movement and speakers involved with Safe Place and Texas Council on Family Violence and Code Pink, and we had, you know, members from the different Vagina Monologue productions, and we had dancers from high schools and, you know, international dance groups, and it was very powerful. It was very, very powerful. And last year we had the event at City Hall, which is where we will be having the event again this year. And so with the 1 billion rising this year, the theme is revolution. So it's what Eve says is that 1 billion rising is a revolution, an energy, a platform, drumming, a global movement, a catalyst, a worldwide decision to end violence against women, a demand for justice, dancing, a paradigm shift, an invitation, a gathering of the ready, housed everywhere, housed in our hearts, rising, you, us, revolution. And so she's inviting everybody to join us. And like I said, rising up against violence and oppression and really working for change. And so it's an exciting thing to be part of. And it's exciting when you get to see other people that are passionate about the movement and coming together and sharing their stories of heartache and the violence that they've experienced and the power that comes from healing and overcoming. And so that's definitely invigorating.
Absolutely. I've just been very impressed with the whole movement and getting people involved and getting people excited about activism and about, you know, just wanting to help change things. I feel
sure.
strongly that the, you know, a who in Whoville is not enough. We have to have a billion who's in Whoville to
That's right.
really shout it out and make a difference and things.
Well, and I feel like change has to take place at every level. You know, it has to take place, you know, at the beginning, the individual, you know, into saying that I want to have a violence-free life. I'm not going to perpetuate violence in my life and my relationships, and I'm not going to be a victim of violence. And from that, you know, then you have those conversations with the people around you. And it's hard to see people that you love and care about, you know, in the cycle of violence. Whether it's through relationships or sexual violence or, you know, gender-based violence that's part of a larger culture where people think that that is acceptable. And so you start out with the person and then you talk to the friends and your family and the coworkers. And then, you know, you hope that the energy and the momentum builds that gives you the strength to gather in public places and to get groups of people together who have a shared mission. And then that energy continues to build and galvanize. And then you have conversations with people who are in charge, people who have power, whether that is, you know, local elected officials, you know, elected officials at the state or national level, especially when it comes, you know, to fundamental human rights and fundamental, you know, rights for women to have autonomy and to have control over their lives and over their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've seen a lot of courageous, you know, women and leaders step up, especially as it seems like, you know, we're going back in time while, you know, especially within this current political climate, you know, at the state level where, you know, rights aren't being given, rights are being taken away. And so this is when, you know, as we've seen, leaders emerge and people step up and they take on their role to lead the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not enough. You can't do it by yourself. And so that's why we need everyone, people who don't consider themselves activists, people who don't consider themselves advocates, to do something, whether that's attending a local anti-violence event, whether it's learning more about the things that are happening in your community or in your family or in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, using the power that you have, you know, whether that's voting, encouraging other people to vote, registering people to vote, whether it's attending rallies, whether it's, you know, donating what you have, whether that's time, whether that's money, whether it's, you know, your energy and passion to the causes that are important to you.
Absolutely. Well, what does the show time got messed up on setting it up, so I'm not sure when it's going to cut off. But I want to make sure that I ask you this. What does being an advocate mean to you? What is it? How do you identify yourself as an advocate?
Well, I identify myself as an advocate when I'm working within the system, when I'm working within a social service agency, when I'm working, you know, with victims of violence, when my job is to hear the victim, hear the survivor, hear what their needs are, and help them meet those needs through my knowledge of the system. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I feel like it's a little bit harder to be an advocate because you are still dealing with the same system that systematically discriminates, that is inherently patriarchal, that is inherently homogeneous, that, you know, does discriminate against those that are different because of their race, mm-hmm. because of their class, because of their gender identity or sexual preference, because of their religion. But as an advocate, you can't change that in that setting. You have
right.
to work within the setting and be knowledgeable of the resources and how the system works to make sure that you are empowering that victim or that survivor through those resources and through that knowledge. And really listening, and something that, you know, as advocates we're hearing more and more about is trauma-informed care and really
right.
Victim-based advocacy, where you're not telling somebody, this is what I think is best for you. You're listening to that individual and what their situation is and what their needs and wants are, and you're using the knowledge you have of the system and of the resources out there to give them that information so that they can be empowered to make the choice that is best for them.
Right.
And not trying to re-traumatize them through the system and not trying to be in a position of, I'm the expert, you listen to me, whereas you're empowering them because they are experts on their own life.
Mm-hmm.
They are expert on their own life. And at the same time, the system can be very overwhelming. And there are never enough resources out there. There's never enough housing. There's never enough emergency shelter. There aren't enough, resources out there for people who are in, dire financial needs. The shelters are always full. There is not enough subsidized housing or transitional housing in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere, but especially in Austin, you know, our medical system, you know, and having access to insurance and knowledge of the programs and having access to the resources you need, there's never enough. And so our job as advocates is to know what resources are out there and how to best access those and, you know, point them in the right direction. And let them decide what is best for them.
Absolutely. And, you know, I know as a prior victim, you know, moving forward to being a survivor, that I didn't know exactly where the resources were.
Sure.
Because that's not
sure.
something that when you're in the community and you're, you know, just living your lives, ordinary lives, and you don't think in advance of, well, you know, what are the resources? You know the water department number, and you know the cable number, and, like dig test or something, you know, just, you know, some emergency type situations. But
yeah.
Then when it comes to domestic violence, one doesn't think, well, hey, maybe I need to hang on to these numbers.
Sure. And so that is something that as an advocate that we do. And we also have conversations with people about letting people know that it's not easy for a survivor of domestic violence or a survivor of sexual assault to go through the justice system. It's not easy when people have concerns about leaving an abusive relationship. Those concerns are 100% valid. And anybody who says that, you know, leaving an abusive relationship is easy does not know what they're talking about. Because it's always more complicated, and it's part of that cycle of violence and power and control. And the institutions that make things more difficult for women in general, but especially women that are victims of violence, women that may be dealing with physical health issues or mental health issues, or dealing with having a lack of access to resources, including secure and safe housing. And so all of these things just compound the issue. And, you know, another thing that we talk about is people who experience complex trauma, people who have been victimized in multiple ways, whether it starts out, you know, being a victim of child abuse, as a young person, and then teen dating violence and, you know, sexual assault as a teenager and as an adult, and in abusive relationships. And when the trauma that can accompany being in violent situations where you feel like you don't have anybody to trust anymore, and the trauma can actually affect the brain chemistry and the way that people heal and the way that people think. And so it is not a simple matter. But the more we know about trauma, the more we know about victim-centered advocacy, then the more change that we can make, you know, more on the individual level. But then the more we know about gender-based violence as a whole and the root causes against violence, then that's how we, as activists outside of the system, work to change things. So I guess that's, for me, you know, for the last 15 years, you know, I've done both. And sometimes simultaneously, and sometimes those things conflict. You know, when you're working within the system, working with what you're given, and you see the disparities, and you see how people are discriminated against, and how it's inherently unfair, and how you want to just scream and run out of the building and say, "I quit," but you can't.
Right.
But you can't. But then that also fuels you for that other role.
Mm-hmm.
That other role when you outside of your day job, that pays the bills, outside of that day job, where you have more freedom to do things like the vagina monologues and organize 1 Billion Rising and going to lobby days and speaking out at the Capitol for women's rights, to an end of violence, to end of homophobia, to all of these, I guess, root causes of violence against, you know, humans in general, but especially women.
Absolutely. And, you know, when we're talking about laws, there are some crazy laws out there right now that are coming up in our legislation, in our Texas legislation and our federal legislation. And it's just so frustrating when some of these lawmakers are making up these crazy laws that, you know, like you have to get a permission before you have an abortion if, you know, from the father. Well, you know, and then they say, well, accepting a legitimate rape, but when do you define legitimate rape?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And
I think,
you know,
it comes from a place of ignorance and intentional ignorance. I think it comes from also a very supreme place of privilege, if this is coming from a man who will never be in that situation.
Right.
Never be in a situation where they are faced with an unplanned pregnancy, whether it is a result of violence or lack of consent or any number of things. They're never going to be in that position. And I feel like once they're at that point, when they're in that that legislature, that they're not dealing with the day-to-day aspects of reality that so many women face, whether it is poverty, whether it is disability, whether it is, you know, just trying to work and take care of your family. And they're so far removed from the day-to-day struggles of people that it's something I think is ideological to them, and they don't realize the real effects. Or maybe they do realize effects and they don't care because it's not part of their agenda. But it's dangerous. It's extremely dangerous when there's such a few people in a position of power that either are ignorant of how these laws and these rules are going to affect women's lives, or they just don't care.
Right.
And it's heartbreaking, and it's sad, and you know, and then in another 2 years or another 4 years when there's another election cycle, you know, people want the change and they get out there and they give their all into trying to elect somebody that's going to speak for them, that's going to be more in touch with their needs and their reality. And then if you see that defeated, I think mm-hmm. as we did very recently, it's hard mm-hmm. and it's discouraging. And then you look at the numbers of people who voted and versus people who didn't vote. And who voted, and then we think about, you know, how there's such a lack of political participation, and then we have people that are creating laws making it even more difficult for people to participate in the political process. And so it's easy to get discouraged, and then
Absolutely. That's
when we have to get rejuvenated somehow. We have to get that strength, you know, and we just want to quit and move to another country.
I know.
You can do that, but it's not very realistic for most of us.
No. And then you leave, you know, you, the activist, leaves the state or the country, and then what happens? There's nobody to speak up for the people that can't. Yeah. And yeah. So, you know, you leave, you feel a responsibility to stay and fight the fight. And, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, some people just didn't realize the gravity of these elections during midterm. And they went along with the presumption that somebody else was going to be able to vote for them. And they didn't. And the numbers didn't get out, which is always predictively the same every midterm. You know, the mm-hmm. only time that they get really riled up is for the president election. So in 2016, they'll be a lot more rallied up. It's too bad that the governor race wasn't also
mm-hmm. didn't correspond with that, yeah.
Yeah, and I think another part that didn't happen was that information didn't get disseminated throughout Texas. It was really strongly focused in Austin. It was really strongly focused in Dallas. But I hear people in Houston and San Antonio that were like, "Who is she?" And you're like,
yeah.
"What? You don't know?"
Yeah.
You know, and it's just really.
And we are still facing, you know, an inherently biased culture
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that proportionately judges a woman on the way she looks, not
yeah.
on the thing that she's capable of. And, you know, it is something where we are still blaming women for being women and blaming women for the choices that they make in their lives, whether it's to have children or not to have children, whether it's to participate or not to participate in the political process or in working outside the home or getting an education. And it's damned if you don't, and it's damned if you do. And, you know, women have historically, you know, been held to different standards. It's still happening, and now 2015.
Right.
And we can change that, you know, like I said, as advocates and as activists within the system and outside of the system, trying to disrupt the current system and the status quo. And I think, like I said, it starts off by having those initial conversations and then, you know, taking it to that next level.
Absolutely. And we've talked, a lot about change and movement and everything. And I really, when you talk about the vagina monologues and then the 1 billion rising, when mm-hmm. the 1 billion rising came about, I got excited. I was like, what? And I think the pure name of 1 billion is just
the,
like,
magnitude of that,
oh,
many people,
gosh.
Sure.
Yes. And then when you saw all the videos from all over the world, because that's one thing that I was kind of discouraged about beforehand, was that we're not reaching the global aspect. Yes, it's happening mm-hmm. here, but we also need to pay attention to the international influx. You know,
sure.
Half the sky exposed a
sure.
lot about that, and
yeah.
a lot of other
yeah.
documentaries exposed a
sure.
lot that.
I think it's both. I think you always have to be concerned about what's happening in your home, what's happening in your town, what's happening in your city, in your state, in your country, and globally, because they're all connected. And I had the opportunity to go to Uganda in 2011
wow.
to work with refugees over there. And it was interesting, just like the stark differences in the access to resources, and living in an area where you didn't even have running water consistently, and you didn't have electricity, and there wasn't a single domestic violence shelter in the entire country of Uganda. And so, I was doing Hope and Healing Art workshops with these refugee women that were coming from the Congo, that were coming from Burundi, that were coming from northern Uganda, where there's still armed conflict. And, I talked to them about the work that, I've done
mm-hmm.
here and in Texas, and the things that happened in my life and my home, and, the thing, and there's so many parallels. There's still stigma about sexual violence. There's still stigma about domestic violence. There's still people using religion to discriminate, religion to engender violence and
mm-hmm.
gender discrimination. There's also, people that are able to use their faith and spirituality to heal and to have a huge source of support and
mm-hmm.
encouragement. So, it was interesting because you got to see, at its extremes, and you got to see the things that were unique to working with people that are, in an armed conflict region and people that are dealing with abject poverty and have absolutely no resources, and the same human conditions that you've grown up with or that you've seen in your own community. And so that was a really powerful opportunity, and I will always be concerned of what's happening on a global level, as well as personal and local, and I don't expect everybody to quit their jobs and to run off to Africa, but you can still be aware, you can still learn what's happening, you can sign petitions, you can send money, and you can talk to other people. Yeah.
Absolutely. I went even for 2 weeks to Guatemala and visited a lot of women programs down there. And it was phenomenal, even just during that time, the impact that you can make. It doesn't have to be a...
Sure.
The VISTA program or something,
mm-hmm.
to do.
Yeah. And the impacts that you can make in our own community, there are homeless people, there are people on the street, there are people, women and children and men, that don't have enough food, that don't have winter coats, that don't have their basic fundamental needs met. And so there are ways to get involved. So there is always an opportunity to help, the issues that you're passionate about. And that's just what I encourage people to do.
Well, I love the song the 1 Billion Rising. It's just so powerful. And I used to play it at the end of the shows, and I haven't reposted it so to be able to play it again at the end of the shows. I just think it's, like, so empowering, you know. This is my body.
And, and the breath-taking dance. And that's the thing, you know, it's reclaiming what is yours. And I've started a small nonprofit called Empower Art, and our mission is to work with survivors of abuse and teach healthy coping skills through music and art. And, you know, and whether it's working with survivors of domestic violence or sexual assault, or working with refugees or survivors of human trafficking, you know, everybody goes through crisis in their life. Everybody goes through hurt, some more than others. But what I feel is universal is that you have to learn how to overcome that hurt and that pain in a healthy way. And that's something that you have to do your entire life. And so for me personally, music and art and activism, that is something that has helped me heal. And that's something that I still need today. So I love getting out there on and getting on the stage. And I love doing the break the chain dance and being ridiculous and getting out in front of a crowd. And that energizes me. I'm a true extrovert. And, you know, you have to find what gives you peace. Mm-hmm. And some people find that through music and art and writing about their experiences. Some people find that, you know, through faith and spirituality. Other people find that, you know, through communing with nature and animals, you know, or a combination of all of those things. And surrounding yourself by people that care about you, the people that want what's best for you, and that will that will motivate you and support you in your healing.
Absolutely.
And that's something that every single one of us has to find for ourselves.
I think journaling is another avenue too. Any form of expression is just really powerful and therapeutic, and it does have a power of healing.
And a lot of I agree with that 100%.
Get past that. You know, a lot of people are afraid to jump over that barrier of, well, I'm not creative. I don't know what's going on, you know. That's not going to help me. But if they could just even dabble a little bit of it, they'll feel the power of it, the healing power of it. Makes them feel better, even if they're not like a masterpiece. That doesn't matter. It's just the
That's not the point. It's the healing that comes from sharing your story. And a project that I'm working on this spring, in addition to the 1 Billion Rising, is actually another V-Day production. I'm not doing the vagina monologues, which is the first time in over a decade that I won't be participating specifically with the vagina monologues, but I'm doing another V-Day production called Any One of Us, Voices from Prison. And it is a play that is a compilation of women's stories from prison, where Eve Ensler actually went into women's correctional facilities and talked with the women about their lives and about the violence that they experienced in their lives and how it connected them to the point where they were at, you know, being incarcerated. And so from those writing workshops, from those women's words, from their journaling, from them sharing their experiences, now there's this play, Any One of Us, Voices from Prison. And so we are working with Conspire Theater, who are a local organization who actually go into Del Valle Women's Prison and Women's Jail and work with the women here in Travis County doing writing and theater workshops. And they work with formerly incarcerated women as well, teaching them to share their stories and experience and gain healing and empowerment from that process. So it's really exciting to be producing this play and working with Conspire and having a cast where almost half of our cast are formerly incarcerated women. So for them to be able to be in this production and share these words of these women who they may very closely identify with, it's pretty exciting.
I bet. Is that part of a program to get them rehabilitated and back into the community, or?
Well, that is something that Conspire, they do that to some extent. You know, they work with the women as you know, using writing and using theater as an empowering process. So, you know, which mm-hmm. when you have been pushed down and stepped on and a victim of every kind of violence that you can imagine and have gone through the justice system, and you come out, you need that. You need that assistance. You need that empowerment. You need that self-esteem in order to move on with your life and to be able to take care of yourself and to work and to provide a life for you and your family. So that is part of the process. And so that's something that Conspire does. And we are, you know, lucky to be able to work with them and to have some of their members in this play to help, you know, show the correlation of violence that women experience and violence that women perpetuate, and mm-hmm. also the how the system is not fair. The system is not just, and it does discriminate against people on a number of different factors. But this play, you know, is an opportunity to kind of take a glimpse into that, into the individuals' lives that are affected by the system and, you know, the greater institutional oppression, you know, as a whole.
Absolutely. So I actually interviewed one lady from Arizona that went through kind of a similar type program. It was kind mm-hmm. of a program to rehabilitate and
sure.
get back into the society. And she ran away when she was 13 and, you know, got involved with drugs and drug dealers
sure.
and domestic violence. And her crime was actually killing her husband.
There was probably violence there.
Yes, lots of violence. Yeah. And she's out now, and she wrote a book called Second Chance. And I think it's just really powerful when they are able to be able to change and move forward with their lives. It's very powerful to see that. You never want that to happen. You never want it to get there. And you hope that, hope and pray that, you know, we get to them before they get to that point of what they feel
is
a point of no return.
Exactly. Sure, when they reach out and they ask for help and when they call law enforcement and they want to report the violence, when they want to file for a protective order, when they want to get custody of their kids and, you know, and mm-hmm. sometimes our system does not allow for that. And things can escalate, and when people feel like they have no options, mm-hmm. then that's when things escalate. And so we don't want people to feel that way. And so goes back into the advocate role for me personally is trying to help them navigate through the system and letting them know about what options there are. Even though there aren't ever enough, there are some. So, but yeah, I mean, I think we could, you know, keep talking about this forever, but, you know.
Absolutely. Well, but the outreach is important. And, you know, Safe Place does the Safe Place Walks, which are now called Illuminate.
Sure, and that's coming up again soon. That was a great event last year, and I look forward to participating again this year.
In the Vagina Monologues and the 1 Billion Rising, every bit of that makes an impact and makes a little bit of noise and makes the community aware. And hopefully when the community gets aware, everybody in the community, you know, starts writing down that number just in case, you know, even if it's not that they get involved with domestic violence, but they are prepared to help a friend or a family member with domestic violence.
Sure, and that is the great thing about Austin because we do have Safe Place. We do have the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. We have the Texas Council on Family Violence. We have SAHALE, Asian Family Support Services. And so we do have those resources where, you know, in more rural parts of the state, they don't have it. So that is the great thing about Austin. And we will continue working together to bring awareness, you know. We'll continue working to bring people's stories to life, whether it's through the Vagina Monologues or any one of us, and you know, or different women's survivor writing projects that I know that that's something that Safe Place is working on right now, and that's been very powerful.
Yeah.
So we'll keep working and we'll keep fighting, and we will continue to try to take care of ourselves and to find the things that give us hope and inspire us to keep fighting the good fight.
Absolutely. Any last bit of words of advice to a listener that might be able to, that might be in a situation or might want to get involved?
Sure.
Any kind of call of actions that you can think of?
Well, I would say that there always is hope. And there always is hope. And, you know, if you're not experiencing violence yourself, but you want to support somebody, a loved one or a family member or coworker who is, just letting them know that you believe them, that that you want to be there to support them, and let them know that they have to make that decision themselves. And that there are resources. So, you know, familiarizing yourself with the resources that are out there can definitely be a really good starting point, and just letting that person know that you care about them and that you're there to help and trying not to come from a place of judgment.
Right.
So that's what I would encourage, and can encourage you to come out to 1 Billion Rising, which will be on February 14th at City Hall, downtown Austin, from 11 to 1, and there'll be very powerful speakers, people, survivors telling their stories, people, activists that are working to fight and to change the system out there. There'll be dancers, and we'll be encouraging you to get out there and dance with us in the Break the Chain dance and music and a way for us to inspire each other and hopefully inspire change.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
Well,
I think
thank
it's
you,
going
Catherine.
To be really exciting.
Yeah.
And thank you for coming on the show and sharing your story and everything. It's very powerful. Thank you so much.
Well, I have definitely enjoyed visiting with you, and I'm glad to have this opportunity. And you keep up the great work that you're doing and giving women a space to talk about the work that they're doing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a very blessed day, and do something good for yourself today. All
Thank
right?
Thank you. I appreciate that, Catherine. You take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And listeners, keep tuning in every day. There is a different speaker every day, except maybe Thursday, because I'm going to be at another event. But we've got people scheduled this week and next week, and it's very exciting, very powerful. And don't forget about the rally on the 24th. Just keep it real and keep it moving along. Hope you have a great day, and thank you for joining us today. Have a good day.